Bengals!
This is Bengals Live on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. This is 700 WLW, the home of the best Bengals coverage.
All right, let's keep it moving. Hour number 3 of 3 about to unfold. It's Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Man, we have talked playoffs tonight. Bengals and Raiders on Saturday, 4:30 in the wild card weekend. I'm Lance McAllister. He is Dave Lapham.
And Lance, want to just give an update. This is amazingly good news. Mike's Car Wash, their contributions, $1 on every car wash that goes to the Anthony Munoz Foundation, has risen to $100,998. It hit the six-figure mark. How about that? Congratulations to the Anthony Munoz Foundation and to Mike's Car Wash for combining on a power duo right there. That's big. That's huge. And also, Bengals fans, this Friday, make sure to listen to myself and Dan Horde for Bengals Pep Rally on the air from 3 to 6 p.m. on ESPN 1530.
All right, let's kick off this hour going big picture, then we'll get into the Bengals specifically. But this is a rough day around the NFL in some parts because it's referred to as Black Monday.
And yes.
Unfortunately, a lot of coaches losing their gigs. Mike Zimmer in Minnesota. The Bears fired their head coach, Matt Nagy, and their general manager. The Miami Dolphins have moved on from Brian Flores. It's always a rough day, but man, Mike Zimmer, we know what he did here. You feel bad for Mike Zimmer.
You really do. And you wonder, you know, these coaches, they're going to get jobs somewhere in the National Football League. I don't know if it's a head coaching job. I don't know about Zim. I wonder if Zim would take a coordinator job somewhere or just say, you know what, I'm just going to wait and see if another head coaching job pops up. Flores, though, is a young guy. I mean, Flores will be highly sought after, I would think.
And Dave, he won 8 of his last 9 games and finished and had winning seasons back to back years and got the gig got the parting gift today.
I mean, I guess when they had their stretch where they lost so many football games and dug a hole, seems like ownership made a decision then. Because if you win 8 out of your last 9, how did they decide? Oh wait, look at how they responded and finished and played for the head coach. Some sort of a decision was made. I don't know what it was based on. Who knows what the relationships are between ownership and the head coach and general manager and everybody involved. But sometimes things can get petty. Sometimes things can get personal, and you don't want to be part of those. That's for darn sure. But, yeah, the league, the National Football League, it's a tough gig. There's no doubt about it. A lot of the coaches' contracts, though, are guaranteed. If, in fact, they do have years left on their deal, they will get paid, not like players being cut and let go. And there might be partial guarantees or bonuses are guaranteed for players, but not the entire contract on a normal basis. But that is the case for head coaches and assistants and people in the National Football League.
And a final note on the big picture of this, the Bears move on from Matt Nagy and Ryan and Pace, their general manager. Nagy had won 13 games at one point in his short tenure in Cleveland or in Chicago, but Justin Fields, the quarterback, is in place there, but they kind of stagnated offensively, and they're blowing that thing up with the coach and the GM out
right,
of Chicago.
Right.
Ryan Day of Ohio State's been mentioned. Listening to Chicago Sports Talk Radio coming in, there's a group, as you can imagine, that want Jim Harbaugh to come back, the former Bears quarterback.
Sure.
It'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
And there was some rumor about Harbaugh down there to Miami because the owner, Ross, is a Michigan man. And, you know, is that the case? And Ross is saying no at this point, but you just never know. But, boy, if Day moves on, ooh, the ripple effect could be, oh, they come knocking on Luke Fickle's door, the Ohio State Buckeyes. I wonder if that would be an enticement for Luke Fickle. And there's always going to be a ripple effect, to trickle up, trickle down, trickle everywhere.
And then there's the Cincinnati Bengals, Dave, who, man, it's worth discussing. A year ago right now, the Bengals had lost their final game of the season to the Ravens. They finished 4-11-1. That day, the Ravens rushed for 400 yards against a depleted Bengals defense. And Mike Brown came out and issued a statement and said he was bullish on Zach and that the Bengals would earn their stripes this year. And, boy, you talk about a decision paying off and how this coaching staff in year 3 delivered. And there was a lot of pressure. When you're 6-25-1, there's a lot of pressure going into your third season, especially when your quarterback is working on a rookie deal and that clock is ticking. man, has this staff delivered this season?
It really has. And you know, Mike Brown is known for his patience with a capital P. He's about as patient as any owner in the National Football League. And he's not embarrassed to say that it comes from the fact that his father was a coach and what happened to his father up in Cleveland with Art Modell.
Yep.
And how it affected his family. He remembers it as a young, you know, as a young son to Paul Brown, how it affected his dad, how it affected his family. So Mike Brown is a very, very difficult time, you know, disrupting head coaches' lives, not just their professional life, but their entire life, the family life and everything that goes along with it. So, you know, the fact that he did show the patience, they believed in Zach Taylor when they hired him. They knew, I guess they, you know, felt like not necessarily going to turn around overnight, but to win a division championship in the third year, pretty good. That's a good payment back on the patience that that you showed the head coach and the rest of the organization, and the relationship between Zach Taylor and the Brown family and the Bengals organization, the two-way respect, the two-way loyalty. Zach will be forever grateful that they gave him the opportunity and then stayed with him and let him accomplish what he has accomplished this year. And really, they're well put together, and they're well set to have a nice run, Lance. I mean, I really would be surprised if this is a one-hit wonder.
Yeah,
you never know. I mean, look what happened to Cleveland last year and the injuries and everything else and just the major disappointment this year. But I do not anticipate Joe Burrow being in a Baker Mayfield situation that Cleveland's looking at right now.
And you talk about the respect front office or ownership to coach, and the same can be said coach to players.
Yep.
I always go back to just something as simple as watching the presentation of game balls after the game and the video that the Bengals.com will tweet out. They do a fantastic job with that. And you can tell it's not, and I talked with Jeff Hobson last week on Sports Talk, how Zach is a guy without any shtick. There's no shtick to it. Zach is true and honest, and it's clear his players have bought into the way he does it and respect the way he does it.
Yeah, I mean, even to the media, Zach is transparent and vulnerable.
Yep.
You know,
yes.
and he is to his players too. He's very human, to his players. And I think they do. I said this about Dick LeBeau. I said the one thing that Dick LeBeau has that a lot of coaches around the league don't is players respect some coaches and they like others, but they don't necessarily respect them as a coach. They like him as a person. Not really. He's okay as a coach. Dick LeBeau had, they respected him and liked him. When you have that 1-2 punch combination, you have something very, very unique and a synergistic effect there that's big time. And I think that's the feeling that a lot of players in this football team just almost universally have, I think, for Zach Taylor, that they both respect him as a football coach in terms of his knowledge, and they like the guy. And when you have that combination, you can do some big things.
And there is no doubt during when you go through a stretch like this team did, where you don't make the playoffs for five straight years, there's a lot of questions being asked. There were questions being asked of Duke Tobin, the front office, scouts, and they've hit a lot of home runs in the last two off seasons in identifying, and we talked about it with Lou Anarumo, specifically defensive players they've been able to plug in, Trey Hendrickson, yep, Mike Hilton, Larry Ogunjobi, guys like that who were impact players who seemed to fit perfectly into the makeup and the DNA of what they were building here.
Yeah, in the most recent addition up front, B.J. Hill,
yep,
for Billy Price.
Yep.
How'd that deal work out? Manischewitz. That was the final. That was the cherry on top of the sundae right there, mm-hmm, for that particular position group. You know, the personnel within that position group. So they've done a great job. I mean, in terms of draft, now they've had very high selection in each round, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have successful drafts. They've handled it right. They put the bat on the ball.
Yep. Even Logan Wilson wasn't a first,
sure,
but a little bit later on in the draft, Logan Wilson has delivered big time.
Absolutely. And in free agency, they really made good decisions. I mean, their due diligence and their research into these players and people, human beings, what makes them tick, what's their makeup, what kind of chemistry might they bring to the organization, what are they going to be like in the locker room? What kind of leaders are they? Are they a leader? Are they a follower? What's been their track record? They exhausted every aspect of this and did a hell of a job getting players.
And Dave, there's no doubt in my mind there is a book here. When the Bengals do win a Super Bowl, Zach Taylor's going to be able to write a book from, I mean, think of it, the situation he walked into with COVID thrown into the mix. The coaching staff was hired late because the Rams had gone to the Super
right.
Bowl. Coaches were meeting each other for the first time at the combine. COVID throws a monkey wrench into everything. You in the second year, you bring in Joe, and then he tears up his knee. There was just a lot that they surfed through, navigated through, guided themselves through to get to this point.
Yeah, and Zach, he has a journal that he speaks about, you know, and he inks it. I mean, it's just pen on paper. And he catches up every single day with things. And so that journal is going to be coming very handy when he writes that book. I mean, there's going to be a lot of documentation that he's going to be able to go to the exact date and year that it happened, you know.
You know, we talked with Lou earlier, and I think it's safe to say he's one of our favorites.
Yes.
And it's hard not to root for him because he was under a lot of fire. The defense last year, and there were a lot of injuries, but the defense had question marks surrounding it, and people wanted Lou Anarumo's head. Get him out. Get a different guy. They stuck with him. He's added some pieces, and that's why I asked him how satisfying it must be, and you could tell in his voice how proud he is of what this defense has become.
No, I agree, and the thing is, the bond that Lou Anarumo and Zach Taylor have is a big one and a strong one. They've known each other and coached with and against each other for a long time, so those kind of things make the decision to hang in there. I know what this guy's about. I've seen it over a longer period of time than just a little short sample size, and I believe, and it paid off.
Take a time out and continue. There's more to get to. We're talking Bengals and the playoffs. How's that sound? He's Dave Lapham. I'm Lance McAllister. It's Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. Hey, back on Bengals Line on this Monday evening. Thanks for hanging out with us on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham.
Lance, Ohio's premier construction equipment provider, Ohio Cat, is the official construction and equipment partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And get the latest news on the Bengals roster, featured stories, and access your tickets by downloading the official Bengals app. Presented by Fifth Third Bank.
Dave, let's keep looking ahead to Sunday, and hopefully, knock on wood, if I can find wood, the guys who are on the COVID list should be back off the COVID list and ready to go this weekend, right?
Yeah, there's a good number. You know, Joe Mixon, DJ Reader, everybody that was on the list last week that didn't travel, and that's it's pretty amazing how many key players didn't even travel to Cleveland, and they just gave them the entire week off because, you know, the travel part of it is a little bit of a disruption to a schedule as well. And if you want a guy to totally get away from it and free his mind, free his body and all that, let him stay home. And that's exactly what they did. So, it really, guys got a heck of a break. I mean, it literally was like a bye week because guys go home, you know, during the bye week. And that's what it boiled down to. So, the guys will be back. And they'll be practicing full tilt, and they'll be ready to go and play. And I think they're going to have a great week this week coming up for practice.
Injury wise, do you have an expectation for somebody like Quentin Spain?
Yeah, that one is the one that I think is the biggest question mark. Got an ankle sprain. It hasn't been clarified high ankle, what type of ankle sprain it is, but usually an ankle sprain. It will last more than a week, you know, miss more than a game. So I think he's very iffy for this football game. Now, he may try to tape it up and almost to the point where you have like a mini cast on the thing. But if your mobility is restricted, you know, and the let's face it, the Raiders have a pretty good defensive front. And if your mobility and you can't establish that strong base that you need to establish and all that, maybe it's better to go with the more healthy, younger player. But man, Quentin Spain has been the glue. I mean, he has. He's held it together up front. He's been a big, big piece of that foundation for the offensive line. He's so powerful and so strong. It'd be good to get him back, but at this point, I'd say it's questionable.
Well, and another one worth keeping an eye on, and he had such a big impact in the first game against the Raiders. He kicked four field goals, including 54, 53, 51, and 47, is Evan McPherson and the groin injury he's dealing with.
Yeah, and when you're, as the old saying goes, a loose groin is a happy groin.
Yes.
But I will say the weather is a factor, and it's supposed to be pretty cold that day, you know. And when you have a groin injury or a hamstring injury or whatever it may be, it's difficult in that cold weather. It's hard to get it stretched out. It's hard to get it warmed up. So I don't think it was a real major pull in these muscle pulls. The location of it, if it's in the belly, you know, that's not as bad as if it's up high, more toward your abdominal region, as opposed to down low by your knee. If it's your hamstring, if it's down by your knee, that's the best place if it's in the belly. But if it's up by your buttocks, man, that's the worst scenario. So depending on where the injury has occurred and how severe, and McPherson, honestly, I mean, he made all the kicks in that football game, and it was noticeable on his kickoffs that he didn't have the leg thrust that he'd had in the past. But hopefully he'll be all systems go for this football game, because like you said, Lance, kicking game could be massive in this one.
Let's talk some matchups for Saturday, Bengals and Raiders. And one name that just is flashing before my eyes is Max Crosby of the Raiders, who, as of last night, passed Trey Hendrickson for most pressures of quarterback this season, and he is a beast. Man, he is something.
He is. I mean, he's one of those guys that we talk about, the H boys, Hendrickson and Hubbard, having that motor, and, you know, just full tilt every single snap. He's that guy. He's that guy as well. He is an effort player and a Pro Bowl player, so in equally effective in setting a tough edge as well as, you know, rushing the passer. And at that point, Isaiah Prince is going to have his hands full. There's no doubt about it. And you have to think about sliding the line, having a tight end in there, chipping with a back. I'm not sure that you leave Isaiah Prince out there one-on-one on a player of that caliber, snap after snap after snap. And another guy, Ngakoue, is on the other, and they have pretty good bookends. And Jonah Williams is going to have his hands full there as well. So it's you can't double everybody on the edge. Somebody's going to have to man up and take their guy one-on-one. And I think Jonah Williams is going to be put in that situation more than Isaiah Prince is, I would think. So it's going to be an interesting battle in the pits, as it always is. But Jefferson is a guy that can make plays inside. I mean, he's a guy that is a disruptive force. They have a very good, solid defensive line that Gus Bradley trusts to put pressure on the quarterback with just that four-man rush, and he's not going to commit any more than that. He's going to keep guys back in coverage and handle that. He's a big cover three guy, Gus Bradley is, and you're going to have to be patient and take what's given to you and manipulate the ball down the field, matriculate it down the field, as Hank Stram said.
Offensively, you mentioned Derek Carr. He threw for 4,800 yards this year, which breaks the Raiders franchise record. Hunter Renfrow is really crafty out of the slot with 103 catches. Jacobs got going last night on the ground. He's still a little bit gimpy. I think they worked him a lot last night and into overtime. I want to see how he's, because I think it's ribs he's dealing with, but they certainly have some offensive weapons that can do some damage.
They do. I mean, the guy that has impressed me, every game that I see the Raiders play in, Renfrow runs unbelievable routes and amazingly effective slot receiver. Like we talked about earlier, Renfrow was contained by the Bengals. He had four targets, caught all four footballs, but only for 30 yards.
Yeah.
His longest catch was 9, so that's going to be interesting how they handle him. And then, of course, like we talked about, the tight end position, but Waller's he's a force. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, Carr is streaky, Lance, but when he is on, when he's hot, I mean, they're going to have to get some hits on him. Going to have to pressure him, and he is affected by contact like most quarterbacks are, and you have to pressure him and get hits on Derek Carr, or he can sit there and take your part.
Hang tight. Much more to get to. When we continue, can I ask you about Ross Browner?
Let's do that.
We will do that as we move on with a Monday night edition of Bengals Line. We're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. Back on Bengals Line on this Monday night. Thanks for hanging out with us, talking all things Bengals and looking ahead to the Bengals and Raiders for the playoffs. It's Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW.
And Lance, as we know, the Cincinnati Bengals are AFC North champions. Join us as we look to rule the playoffs. Order season tickets for next year and guarantee your spot for all possible home playoff games this year. Call the Bengals ticket hotline at 513-621-8383 or visit bengals.com/tickets. Rule Dave, the playoffs.
Dave, the sad news of last week was certainly the passing of Ross Browner, the former Cincinnati Bengal who passed away at the age of 67. He was the eighth pick in the 1978 draft out of Notre Dame. Tell me about Ross Browner.
Ross Browner, big old number 79, had length and strength. He had long arms, and he used them to his advantage. He would create leverage every snap that he played defensively. He had lateral movement. He had quickness, tremendous athleticism. But that's as a player. And he was part of the web, obviously. Wilson Whitley, Eddie Edwards, Ross Browner, and Gary Burley out of a 3-4 defensive look. And Ross Browner, Super Bowl season, he had 9 or 10 sacks that year.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Super Bowl itself, he had a 10-tackle performance with a quarterback sack of his former teammate, Joe Montana. So great football player, obviously. And I remember in pass rush, you know, Anthony Munoz and Ross Browner would really go after each other in a very positive way,
sure,
trying to make each other better. And Ross Browner would say, you know, heck, going against Anthony Munoz, you know, I'm the guy that I'm playing on Sunday, it's going to be a vacation, man. Going against him every day in one-on-ones, man, there's nobody better. And I said, Ross, you're exactly right, man. You're going against the best. So, you know, use it to your advantage as you prepare for the opponent, no doubt about that. But the thing about him is his laugh, and everybody's talked about it. He had this big, you know, real boisterous belly laugh,
yes,
and it was contagious. And he'd get everybody in a good mood. And that's the thing about Ross. He lived his life as an optimist. You know, he wasn't a Debbie Downer, a pessimistic guy. He was always in a good mood, and, you know, he'd always uplift everybody, put his arm around you and have something positive to say, you know, about you or for you. He was just a really good guy, good, you know, special human being. And Bengals Nation lost a good one, and rest in peace, my man.
Boy, I'm glad you said that about his personality, because our guy Wayne Box Miller had passed along the interview he did with Ross in the pregame countdown to kickoff back in November, I think it was. And I was just struck by how happy, how vibrant, how bubbly he sounded during that interview. And just he was referencing the 81 team reunion back in September at Paul Brown Stadium. There was just such a sense of joy in his voice.
Absolutely. And to see him at that, and just this past September, to see him there and with the big smile on his face and the big booming laugh as usual, and getting everybody in a good mood and in a positive frame of mind. And then realized that COVID took him. Mm. I mean, and I guess the last month it was very difficult. He spent a lot of time in the hospital and unfortunately became a victim of COVID-19.
You mentioned the web. And, man, Reggie Williams, Eddie Edwards, Ross Browner. Reggie had 10 sacks on that 81 defense. Eddie Edwards had 10. Reggie had 11. Ross had 9. You talk about a trio. Holy cow.
Yeah. At that point, that was like the Bermuda Triangle. You know, you're going to be entering a danger zone. And it's almost like with Henderson and Hubbard on either end.
Yeah.
Well, you had Eddie Edwards and Ross Browner on either end, and then Reggie Williams lining up right next to Ross Browner, and they'd run some stunts, you know, and twists and pressure the quarterback that way. And, it worked out well. It had some good athletes on that football team.
You know what I did not know? Of all the stories I knew about Ross Browner, I did not know until, sadly, the news of his passing. And I'm reading, I just Googled his name and found the story of the Rudy story of Rudy Rudinger.
Yes,
I did not realize Ross Browner was the player that came out for Rudy to come on the field for the final snap of the game. I did not know that. All these years, I didn't know it was Ross who came off the field.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, and Ross talked about how the movie was, for the most part, accurate. They took some liberties.
A little Hollywood.
Walking in and putting the jerseys
right
on Dan, it never happened. And
right,
Dan really wasn't against Rudy as much as the movie portrayed. But, yeah, Ross came out on the final play of the game, so Rudy came in, and Rudy gets the sack, and the rest, they say, is history.
And honestly, I can see if somebody had to volunteer to do it, I could see Ross Browner being front and center.
Yeah.
I'll take that. I'll take that responsibility, because if there's any grief, I'll handle it. I'll take care of it.
Yeah. Good stuff. And certainly thoughts and prayers to his family on the sad news. We'll take a time out and come back. This is the anniversary. Dave is celebrating that with a sweatshirt he is wearing. We're
going
to look
sweatshirt.
Back to the Freezer Bowl on this date 40 years ago today. It's funny, Ken Anderson tweeted a little bit earlier, oh, it's the 40th anniversary of the Freezer Bowl. No wonder I'm cold today. We'll do that as we continue. It's Bengals On and the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. Heading down the stretch on this Monday night of Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham.
Lance Shop Nike, offering the best selection of men's, women's, and youth jerseys anywhere. Visit the Pro Shop 7 days a week, located on the north side of Paul Brown Stadium, or shop online at Bengals.com.
All right, let's do a flashback. 40 years ago today, it was the Freezer Bowl, and since we're a radio medium, paint the picture of what you are wearing right now in celebration.
Yes, I've got a sweatshirt that was sent to me that says Freezer Bowl and has the date, January 10th, 1982. Coldest I've ever been in my life, I can tell you that. And it has permanently lowered my thermostat. I do not handle cold weather as well as I once did, Lance. I think age is a factor, but I do think that the Freezer Bowl is a factor as well.
Can I show you my shirt for purposes of
radio?
Oh,
yes, the Yipe Stripes.
It is the Yipe Stripes T-shirt. Yes. On the back, it says, I survived the Freezer Bowl, with the date and the score. And then everybody's signature on the Yipe Stripes on the front of it. You're somewhere around here. Let's see. This is great radio since nobody can. Oh, here. Your signature is right there.
Yes.
I'm right there. I saw Ross Browner over there. Yeah, this is my collectible from that game.
That was Glenn Cameron and my company that did that
was
T-shirt.
Was it real?
Pro T-shirts did that
How
shirt.
How about that?
Yes, we sold a ton of them.
Really?
Yes.
I never knew this.
To Pogues, to Lazarus, to all the department stores.
Shillitoe's?
Yes.
Did I get Shillitoe's?
Yes.
I may have
Shillitoe's.
Got mine at Shillitoe's. I don't know.
As,
wow.
Or as my father-in-law used to say, Shillitoe's, Pagui's. I mean, he had them all in the... Instead of Pogues, it was Pagui's. It was Shillitoe's instead of Shillitoe's.
I did not know you were part of this shirt.
Yeah, we were the owners, Glenn Cameron and myself. We had pro T-shirts, and that was our that was our idea right there.
How about that?
We had to get it cleared through NFL properties.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I've heard so many stories about the Freezer Bowl, but tell me about three elements of the Freezer Bowl in no particular order. Vaseline, saran wrap, and pantyhose. Tell me how each played into the Freezer Bowl.
I can tell you about Vaseline and pantyhose. Vaseline was big for me. There's no question about that. That sounds horrible.
And am I correct?
Sorry, Lynn.
I thought something I read was, did the officials give you guys you were allowed to use Vaseline by their blessing? Because normally you couldn't put Vaseline on your arms, right?
Right. What they said was you could use Vaseline on exposed skin, meaning like face and that kind of stuff. Well, I said, you know what? My arms are exposed. That's exposed skin. I'm going to put Vaseline on the arms. And, of course, the then San Diego Chargers did not like that one bit. And I said to the official, you know, hey, exposed skin. But it was so cold, Lance, it coagulated. You couldn't manipulate the Vaseline. I mean, it was like, couldn't move it. But it did still provide, you know, where you couldn't be grabbed. So I had big old Gary Big Hands Johnson, and that was the reason I didn't want any sleeves on on my arms where you could pull cloth and pull you out of your shoes. And one of the very first series on a pass rush, you know, I jam him and extend the arms, and he like tries to swat and grab, and he hit the back of my tricep, and it stung like hell in that cold weather, obviously, but his hand slipped right off there. I said, it's working, man. This is going to be good. But it was an interesting day.
Did you wear pantyhose?
I did not wear pantyhose, but a lot of guys did. I did not feel comfortable in the pantyhose, but it was something that a lot of guys did. You were trying to figure out anything you possibly could to get yourself a little bit of an edge in terms of that temperature. The thing that I most vividly remember, though, is sitting down on the heated benches for the first time.
Yep.
That I ever experienced. And I went and sat on that thing after a series on the field offensively, and it was like, man, this is pretty nice. And the defense turned them over pretty quickly, and I'm like, I want to marry this heated bench. I don't want to leave this thing. So I never sat on it again.
Oh, wow.
I got within range where you could feel it a little bit. It was just blowers going through the bench area, but I just didn't like that contrast.
Yeah.
And the hardest part of the game for
halftime.
Yeah, was going to get warmed up
and then going back out.
The contrast, because it was like literally, it was like jumping right back into a freezer. It was nuts, man. It was crazy. And you know how, at that point, you knew how it was going to feel. You knew it was not going to be pleasant. Forrest Gregg's pregame talk, though, was the best ever, because he played in the Ice Bowl, which was the Dallas-Green Bay game. That was -9 raw temperature and like 38 below or whatever. Ours was -13. Ours was -9, which was not the coldest raw temperature, but wind chill, we were colder than that, like 59 below. But he played in one and coached in the other. So he gets up and he says, I can tell you by experience that this is not going to be fun. And it's going to be like going to the dentist, man. You're not going to want to do it, but you have to do it. So just go out there, get it out of your mind, and don't let the weather become a big factor. And he was right. It was on all counts. It wasn't pleasant, but you had to do it.
Yes.
They came close to postponing that.
I was just going to ask you, because I remember as a kid waking up and hearing, I'll never forget this, hearing on the radio the reports, the commissioner, Pete Rozelle, and under advisement right now considering whether the game will go on or not. So there was doubt of whether to go with it or not.
Yeah, there was. There was some extreme doubt, some severe doubt. And I think they let the people – you know, make a decision in that regard. I can say, though, that vigorously exercised, obviously, out there, ran around for like 3+ hours and never came close to breaking a sweat, ever came close. Mm. And I remember that hot shower after the thing to thaw out a little bit, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that hit now, because you were literally frozen.
Oh, my goodness.
And the turf, the artificial turf, was hard as rock because, you know, that was the shared stadium. It was concrete, a little bit of foam, and then the AstroTurf, and they wanted it. You know, when the ball hit the gaps, they wanted it to go to the wall. In baseball, oh man, it wasn't fun to play on in football. And then in that cold weather, man, when you'd hit, that was one contact. Then if you went to the ground during the course of the play and you hit that frozen turf, oh man, it started moving organs internally. You know, it jostled you around, man. That stuff was hard as a rock. It felt like, you know, probably multiple car accidents, I would imagine.
My two memories, just as a fan, being there with my dad and my sister, I made the dumb decision to paint my face orange and black.
Oh, yeah?
I had stripes on my face, and it froze, so it like started cracking. I was in a ski suit, and the most valuable piece of material that day was the cardboard holders that people put drinks in.
Yeah, yeah.
We would grab 6 or 7 of them because you didn't want your feet on the cement. You stacked them up, and then you put your feet up on the holders.
Insulation.
Yes, yeah. I was in a snowmobile suit, and I'll never forget drinking hot chocolate, and it spilled because I really couldn't feel it, and it started running down my ski suit. But it froze halfway down. It didn't run all the way down to my belly. It stopped because it just froze halfway down. That's how cold it was.
No doubt. My son was like 6 years old at the time. He came to the game with my wife and my mother-in-law, and he was in a big like ski suit, you know, for younger kids and all that. And they said all of a sudden tears came out of both his eyes. He wasn't really sobbing or anything, but he was just so cold, and they froze like right on his cheeks. So my mother-in-law says, I'll take care of him. I'll take him. She takes him home, never comes back.
Oh, wow.
So it's just my wife survived the freezer bowl solo.
Wow. And my one final memory, I was with my dad and my sister. My sister, we just kind of were dragging her along. And late in the game, we're all obviously ready to go home, and there was a timeout called. And my sister starts crying. She says, I want to go home. Yeah. And I leaned out in our seats and looked at my dad, and we looked at each other, and we looked at my sister. I said, the Bengals are a few seconds away from going to the Super Bowl. We are not leaving this game. Just, I want to go home. I'm so cold.
You know, timeouts, that's funny you bring that up, Lance, because as players we're like, really?
Yes.
We got to stand around? I mean, it's so cold.
Yes.
Everybody's still running around and stuff. It's like, oh, my gosh. Let's play the commercial free, you know? Yeah. And then, oh, no, these commercials are big dollars, you know. This is what's paying everybody's salaries, man. The officials, we kept begging them, don't go to timeout. Don't do it. Let's just play.
Beautiful.
It's crazy.
Take one more timeout, come back, put the wraps on it. Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. All right, down the stretch we go. Final segment tonight on Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW.
You know a young Bengals fan? Be sure they're a part of the Bengals Kids Club presented by College Advantage to attend exclusive events at Paul Brown Stadium. Find out more at Bengals.com/kids. And ladies, the Bengals have a club just for you. Show your Bengals spirit by joining Who Dey Ladies, presented by Kleenex, You by Cottonex, Cottonelle, and Huggies. To sign up, visit Bengals.com/ladies.
Dave, as you know, this will be the third time the Bengals and Raiders have played in the postseason. The first in 1975 was December 28th of 1975. Raiders 31, Bengals 8 at Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. That was your first playoff experience, correct?
It was. And my son was born on December 23rd.
Wow.
And so I'm like, ooh, man. I remember I remember going to the hospital and saying, you know, Lynn, you know, she had to have a section, so we knew exactly. We scheduled it to have the surgery around, literally around practice and stuff.
Wow.
It was crazy. So back and forth between practicing for the Raiders game and going to the hospital for the birth of my son Dave, and then had to go take off right away and go to the West Coast. And we had a chance to win that football game. We didn't. I remember that was the beginning of a process to change pass protections because we got in a situation where Ten Hendricks was in blitz pickup against Booby Clark, and he got back-to-back sacks on us at the end of the football game that knocked us out of field goal position that could have tied the football game up. And it was unfair to ask Booby to block Ted Hendricks, who was a great player, great pass rush guy. And, man, the Raiders figured out our protection and just brought Ted Hendricks off the edge, and it was a miserable occurrence. But the one thing I remember, Otis Sistrunk was who I was playing against from University of Mars. And I remember seeing him on Monday Night Football in a cold stadium and his head steaming. It looked like his head was burning off, man. And Sistrunk, he was they had Art Toms out of Syracuse, Sistrunk, Matt Millen. I mean, that
Phil Villapiano.
Phil Villapiano, yes. Oh, no doubt. Yes. Phil Villapiano. That was a good football team. Dave Casper was playing tight end for the Raiders. Kenny Stabler, quarterback.
Pete Banaszak.
Yes, Pete Banaszak. Yeah. Marv Hubbard from Colgate.
Yes.
Marv Hubbard. But up front, the offensive line, Henry Lawrence, Art Shell, Gene Upshaw.
Dave Dalby.
Dave Dalby at center.
Yes.
Vella at right guard. They had a damn good offensive line. That was a good football team.
And the other matchup, of course, January 13th of 1991, Bengals lose to the Raiders 20-19. That's Kevin Walker tracking down Bo Jackson. Man, I can close my eyes and I see it. A run around the end and up the sideline, 34 yards. Kevin Walker grabs him and pulls him down from behind in the third quarter. And the hip kind of pops out, pops back in, and that was Bo's final football game.
It really was. And Kevin Walker, to this day, I mean, he'll talk about it that, you know, he grabbed him and he was kind of sliding down his legs a little bit. And he said Bo was so strong, and he just tried to pull away. And he said he could – it was almost like when you take a chicken bone and you kind of pull the bone away from the thigh, the leg bone.
Man.
He said that kind of noise. He said it was making this weird noise and stuff. It was like, what's this guy doing?
Oh.
It was like Superman. It like separated his you know, his leg from his hip. I mean, gah. And then it goes back into place. But that was the end of the Bo Jackson as we knew him for sure.
And oh, man. Well, that will do it, and I look very much forward to next week because as much as history has been talked about, I cannot imagine how cool it's going to be 1 week from tonight when a new history is written and Joe Burrow and the Bengals win a playoff game, and this city's going to go upside down.
I'll tell you, it'll be off the hook. There's no doubt about that, and I really think that if they get that done, they can go to Tennessee. I mean, I think there's a chance of heading over to Tennessee, and a lot of Bengal fans, that's an easy drive, you know. I mean, hopefully they'll get some tickets available to them and go over and experience that potentially in the second round of the playoffs. We shall see.
It has been fun. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. We'll catch you 1 week from tonight. It's been Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW.